Seekers. Welcome to tonight's program. My name is Mike Malloy. Thanks for tuning in. We will have a guest, as we infrequently do. Next hour, it is Kevin Zeis, Z-E-E-S-E. Kevin Zeis, the executive director and co-founder of Voters for Peace, which is a nonpartisan project working to end war, prevent war, reduce the military budget. And as you know, one of the co-sponsors of the October 2011.org event, that's the website, scheduled to begin October 6th, a Thursday. I will be there. I hope you will. This hour is sponsored by Larry Hotham, and the message for Michelle, happy birthday, love, Dad. Now, see, I love that kind of message. That is so sweet. From Larry Hotham, who is our sponsor this hour. For Michelle, happy birthday, love, Dad. Thanks, Larry. The story I was mentioning the other night about the drawings made by the children of Gaza that were scheduled to be shown at the children's MoCA, the museum in Oakland, California, the Bay Area, and it was stopped by an organized resistance of Jewish organizations in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, who put enough pressure on MoCA to withdraw this exhibit. Got an email today from Jan in Mill Valley, California. Mike, thanks for bringing up the subject of this odious censorship by the organized Jewish community against the art of the children of Gaza. I have seen several of the drawings, and they remind me of the drawings made by the traumatized children of El Salvador, whose lives were so disrupted by the U.S.-backed military and death squads. When those pictures were shown, there was no objection from the Jewish Community Relations Council of San Francisco. In fact, there were Jews active in showing these pictures. But when it comes to the art of the traumatized children of Gaza, the Jewish Community Relations Council does not want anyone to see what the children have experienced under the bombs, missiles, and white phosphorus unleashed on them during Israel's lethal attack on Gaza a few years ago. This issue has traveled around the country and has raised outrage among those who see this censorship as purely a means by the Jewish Community Relations Council to cover up what Israel has done. A letter to MoCA, the museum, is being circulated, and anyone wanting to add their name can email by tomorrow night to this address, martha@martinreese.com. Let me give it to you again, martha@martinreese, R-E-E-S-E. .com. martha@martinreese.com by tomorrow night. Jan in Mill Valley, who, just by way of identification, happens to be Jewish. You know, I have seen now some of the pictures. They're available online, some of the drawings by the kids, and they are what you would expect from children, no matter where the children live, if they live in Vietnam, during our massive bombing campaign of that country, if they live in Central America, as Jan mentioned, during the American-sponsored terror that went on during the entire length of the Reagan administration. That there were children from schools in Israel who had suffered because of terrorist attacks within their country, buses being blown up with school children on board. if there were drawings from children in the former Soviet Republic of Georgia, children in Northern Ireland, children in various African countries. If you look at some of these drawings and see what the children are trying to express, it is at once heartbreaking, but also might point the adults in the direction that we should be going, and that is toward an end to this madness. Just an end. Why has that been so difficult? What evolutionary function is still being served by wars of opportunity, by attacking? I'm sure there is one. I'm sure that, you know, the big argument that was put out in African Genesis, Robert Ardrey's book, 40 years ago, was that the original human was not a tool maker, but was a weapon maker. And that's what caused the, if that's the right word, evolution of the human brain and eventually the evolution of the human species. Weapon making. Matter of fact, you can, if you saw 100 times like I have, 2001, A Space Odyssey, remember the scene where the ape-like creature looks at the what appears to be the foreleg of an antelope bone and picks it up and kind of stares at it and then realizes what's in his hand or her hand, a weapon. So maybe there's no way to get around this except for the fact that we now have higher brain function than those pre-humans. So why do we still kill each other? Listen, it is Wednesday, which means it's church night, prayer meeting. Back when I was a kid, a third hour, I'm going to lash as best I can. I will conduct my own personal inquisition of the Catholic Church. And the reason for it is a group here in the United States. Well, first of all, it's not a group. The organization Center for Constitutional Rights has, on behalf of a group here, the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, has gone to the International Criminal Court in The Hague yesterday, seeking an investigation of the Pope and top Vatican cardinals for possible crimes against humanity. This is a good one. You're going to like this because, as you can well imagine, I'm going to hold my own inquisition, which means burnings at the stake, which means drownings, which means I might even trot out the Iron Maiden and put these rat bastards inside and slam the door. But stick around for that. That'll be a little bit later. Also, Prairie 2. Tonight, Van Helsing brings good news to the village. When I saw this subject line, I just about lost it. Van Helsing brings good news to the village. Oh, my God. The monster has been killed. The vampire is dead. Also, since it is prayer meeting night, we have a couple other things here. Something going on in North Carolina. You ever heard of Oklahoma Republican lawmaker Sally Kern? You will in a few minutes. What else we got here? Whole bunch of stuff. Stick around. And don't forget, coming up during the beginning of next hour, and maybe for the whole hour, Kevin Zeis. If you haven't been to October2011.org, please go there. We'll be right back.
Yeah, boy. Action Against Right-Wing Rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. You know, again, I think I've mentioned this before. I was brought up at a time when a person's, a politician's religious beliefs or lack thereof were personal business, his or her personal business. And the only time it was ever brought to my attention was when Kennedy had to assure the evangelical Christians that he was not going to let the Pope run the country. When did it start? All of a sudden you had to make these public declarations. And now it's gotten to the point where it is the most sickening madness I've ever seen. I heard Lawrence O'Donnell talking about this tonight. Also, in order to be a Republican candidate these days, and by extension a Republican voter, you have to disconnect whatever mind you have and go back to the bells and books and candles of the Middle Ages. Science has no place in the Republican agenda or platform. No place, nothing. It's all this crazed, superstitious, black cat spooks in the sky stuff now. And God forbid, I know. God forbid anyone who seeks Republican office who is not willing to flatten himself to or herself, prostrate themselves in front of this crazed, evangelical, dominionist, sick religion. What the hell has happened? How did that happen so quickly? And yet, these very same people will tell you that they are a persecuted minority. Yeah. Yeah. The evangelical Christians. You know, there is only one person with a regular daily radio program that I'm aware of who constantly tries to kick the asses of these religious freaks. And that's his program. What are they talking about? That they're this benighted, persecuted, put upon minority. These Christian Republicans. But it's gotten to the point where it's no longer a religion to them. It has become a political firestorm. And somehow, the teachings, those quaint little teachings of Jesus, have just become snot balls and flicked into the air. They don't exist anymore. It's this rabid, maniacal, think this way, the Bible is going to run this country, or we are going to kill you. It's very simple. We will kill you, and we will kill your immortal soul. We will destroy you. Who? Man. You know, the Republican Party a couple of decades ago tried to identify itself as the family values, whatever the hell that is. They defined it, and it was based on this sick Christianity. What are family values? I know a couple of gay women who have three or four children between them, and they have the best family values I think I've ever seen. I know heterosexual, formerly married couples who are just sick in ripping each other apart as they get out of their marriage and destroy their children. What are family values? What the hell are family values? It started out that way with these Republicans. And then it degenerated into this religious insanity. Now, family values is reserved, or are reserved, only to those who follow this dominionist, sick, hand-waving, eyeball-rolling, form of Christianity, this frothing at the mouth, this, you know, you get Michelle Bachmann up there talking about she's hot for Jesus, and Sarah Palin being exorcised, a pre-exorcism, in case there are any haints hanging around her that might try to inhabit her body. And people, Rick Perry was at Liberty University today, which is about liberty about as much as Hitler was about love of the Jews. There's Rick Perry talking about, well, I didn't have a choice, you know. I didn't choose Christianity. It just came to me. I didn't have any place else to go. They're all this way. You show me, even Newt Gingrich now. Newt Gingrich! This lying, cheating, serial adulterer snake. Now, all of a sudden, that he's found Catholicism through his zombie-like wife. Every time I think of her, I just get the willies. You know, even Newt Gingrich. We'll be right back.
Hi, truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour regarding the cancellation of the children's art exhibit, the kids from Gaza. Duke in Tampa writes, Mike, the Zionist banning of Palestinian children's art in San Francisco has its precedence. In 1989, Joseph Papp, the producer of the New York Shakespeare Festival, canceled a scheduled appearance by the Al Hakawati Palestinian Theater Company of Jerusalem at his public theater. Mr. Papp said at the time he had dropped the show because he was concerned about the reaction of Jewish theatergoers in New York and did not want to present a Palestinian play about the Middle East without also presenting an Israeli one. That was from the New York Times, July 15th, 1989. And more recently, Duke writes, I'm sure you remember this, I think you discussed it on your show, I did, the play on Rachel Corrie, the American woman who was murdered by a bulldozer driver as she was trying to stop the destruction of Palestinian homes in land that the Jewish settlers wanted. She was run over and murdered by the, I think it was the IDF driver, an Israeli soldier. And the play written about that incident was canceled in New York. I don't think it's necessary. I wonder if the leaders of Israel ever stop and consider the horrific resentment that they are building up, have built up around the world. I mean, it's one thing to be locked in their death struggle with the Palestinians, as bad as that is. But in every single attempt of the outside world to learn something or to know something about the Palestinians in any of the occupied territories, whether it's the West Bank or Gaza, the Israeli government and American Jews, Jews around the in various parts of the world, do everything in their power to stop it. And of course, this is not a monolithic; it's not a singular response. As we've said on the program many times, some of the most active peace advocates seeking an end to this madness are Jewish. either Israeli Jews or American Jews or Jews in the UK, Canada, who are desperately, desperately trying to bring some sense to the decisions made by the Likud party and more recently Netanyahu, who has displayed over and over again that he is clinically insane. About this issue, I mean, just totally over the hedge, gone. And so many people in Israel understand this. It's a terrible, terrible, terrible situation. And to continue, it's like the United States government continuing to build up absolute hatred, to the point that people are willing to kill themselves in order to demonstrate their complete contempt and hatred of the United States. And we continue the policies. We apparently cannot stop. We are like Rush Limbaugh on OxyContin. We just cannot stop. And the horrific treatment by the Palestinians by the Israelis reflects upon, rightly or wrongly, and of course it's wrongly, reflects negatively on every Jew anywhere on earth. It just does. It's a horrible situation, horrible. And there's no way out of it, apparently. It just doesn't exist. From Prairie 2, Van Helsing brings good news to the village. I like that. The Obama administration has come one step closer to ending the scourge of the too-big-to-fail banks ravaging this country. The FDIC board voted 3-0 yesterday to approve rules under the Dodd-Frank law that will require the large banks to write their own obituary in advance. Yay! In the event of another financial crisis, like they were planning for something unusual in the event of another sunrise. In the event of another financial crisis, in the inevitable crisis when the big banks can no longer capitalize themselves, these banks will be broken up into component pieces for liquidation instead of being bailed out. Ooh, dismemberment. I love that. These new rules require banks with $50 billion or more in assets to submit so-called living wills to the FDIC, the Federal Reserve, and the Financial Stability Oversight Council, and send revised plans annually. Included on this list are Bank of America, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, and J.P. Morgan Chase. The biggest banks must file by July 2012 and smaller ones in another year. The FDIC says that 124 financial firms or more will be subject to the requirements, 26 of which are U.S. banks or financial firms. The rest are U.S. subsidiaries of banks based in foreign countries. The rules would also apply to 37 federally insured banks and thrifts holding about $3.6 trillion in deposits, or roughly 60% of all federally insured deposits. Regulators under this act would have the power to seize and dismantle banks and companies that threaten the broader financial system. An actual collapse of the banking system is not required for the government to act. They also have the power to designate other firms as potentially threatening the financial system and require them to submit plans. The breakup plans must include detailed information on a bank's businesses and operations structure, assets and liabilities, capital cushion held against risk, and how much they owe other big financial institutions. If their operations change, the banks would have to submit revised plans within 45 days. The sort of creative asset and liability shuffling that marked the years leading up to the 2008 collapse would be illegal without notifying the government. Based on the review of these plans, the banking regulators are empowered to order financial institutions to make changes to their operations, such as selling assets or divisions. They also can reject the plans outright and order the banks back to the drawing board. In short, predatory capitalist banking is dead.
Really?
And good riddance. Unfortunately, the minute Republicans get back into control, they will dig up the corpse and reanimate it. In the debate on whether Obama is really a progressive, this little piece of regulation was something even FDR wasn't able to achieve. That being said, the monster isn't dead yet. Villagers should continue to sleep with one eye open torches and pitchforks at the ready. PrairieNumeral2.com. Van Helsing brings good news to the village. This hour is sponsored by Larry Hotham. And his message is for Michelle, and it is happy birthday. Love, Dad. Larry Hotham. Thanks, Larry. Sally Kern. She's an Oklahoma Republican lawmaker, and she acknowledged, Philip wrote to me, I wrote this to me, she acknowledged 9/11 the only way she knew how, by describing homosexuality as a threat worse than terrorism. Of course. Plus, she also says minorities don't make a lot because they don't work as hard as white people. I sent you the Google link. I would really like to see you sink your teeth into this blank. As always, thanks for giving me the airtime and allowing me to rant on your show. I really do appreciate what you do. Sadly, I am one of the real poor of the country, or I would buy a week's worth of sponsorships. Well, that's right, Philip. But I'll tell you what, for you folks who are not quite in the unemployment lines, we are getting extremely low on sponsorships. If you are interested in the show continuing, you might consider a sponsorship or buying signing up for a podcast subscription. Go to MikeMalloy.com. The information's all there. So what we have here, Sally Kern, another gay-hating Christian legislator. It should come as no surprise to anyone that she is an anti-homosexual bigot. The woman has been making untrue and dangerous comments about gay folks since she began in politics. Human Rights Commission's President Joe Solomonese sent out a mass call to action asking Human Rights Commission members to hold Kern responsible for her hateful comments. Just last week, Oklahoma State Representative Sally Kern told a talk show host that homosexuality is a bigger threat to the United States than terrorism. I'm sorry, what? That's right. Sally Kern claimed that because young people learn that homosexuality is normal and natural, and because they're bombarded with it every day, it is more dangerous than terrorist attacks. And if comparing gays and lesbians to terrorists wasn't bad enough, in the same interview, Kern also blamed the AIDS crisis on the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community, recycling that outdated, tired charge that gays are responsible for the epidemic, instead of calling for more supportive programs to prevent new HIV infections. And by the way, most HIV infections occur, of course, within the bodies of heterosexuals.
Radical Talk Radio, it's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. And also in North Carolina, the Senate in North Carolina yesterday, in a vote of 30-16, agreed to let voters decide during the May primaries next year whether the state constitution should be amended to ban same-sex marriage. The House in North Carolina passed the measure the day before, 75-42. It's already illegal for people of the same sex to marry in North Carolina. Gay folk are not afforded in so many states equal protection under the law, which is all they've ever asked for. Just equal protection under the law, same thing that African Americans, that's all they ever asked for. And it's not been that long ago that blacks and whites could not get married. I lived in Richmond, Virginia at a time when the miscegenation laws were still on the books. So it wasn't that long ago. But if the amendment passes, it will reinforce the ban on same-sex marriage and make it more difficult for future legislatures to extend marriage rights to gay and lesbian couples. Obviously, they'd have to go back and re-amend the Constitution if it passes. It's North Carolina. There's no telling how this could go. North Carolina has a history of, you know, Jesse Helms be damned, a history of surprising people with their libertarian, left libertarian stances on so many issues, not right-wing libertarian, but kind of left libertarian. So we'll see what happens. But if this passes, it could also call into question domestic partnership benefits offered by public institutions and the application of domestic violence laws. That's according to an associate professor of law at University of North Carolina. This constitutional proposal would also bar the state from sanctioning civil unions. Now, originally, backers wanted the issue on the ballot November 2012, obviously, where all the Christian insane people would flood the polls, and they're all Republicans. There are no insane Christian Democrats. It's just impossible. You might have some religious Democrats, which is kind of weird, but they are not insane. The Christians, the insane Christians are all Republicans, or vice versa. All Republicans are insane Christians. Well, no, I guess there's some Jewish Republicans. Anyway, they wanted to have it on ballot November 2012, where it would get voters out to vote against Obama. And the governor of North Carolina, Bev Perdue, who's a Democrat. So to kind of stop the accusations that the ballot initiative was driven solely by politics, the date was moved to the state's primary election in May. Now, the only problem with that, of course, is the Republican primary or Democratic primary, but especially Republican primary. That's where the real crazies come out, in the primaries. You know, the moderate or centrist Republicans, if there are any left, which I doubt, they don't show up for the primaries. The primaries are the private playgrounds of the crazy Republicans. That's why you wind up with McCain and Palin. Speaking of McCain, Joe McGinnis's book is coming out on Sarah Palin. Woo! Lord have mercy! Sex with basketball players, doing cocaine with her hubby, smoking weed, the Daily Mail of the UK, which, you know, you take the Daily Mail with as many grains of salt as you want, but they're quoting from Joe McGinnis's book. all those things that the Republican, all those Republican horny men, every time Sarah Palin took the stage, you could just hear the hearts thump and the blood pressure go up, right? You don't have to, come on. Guess what? It's all true. It's all true. My God, I can't wait till this one comes out. Anyway, back to North Carolina, the crazy people that show up for the primaries. The Reverend Patrick Wooden, yeah, that's his name, Patrick Wooden of the Upper Room Church of God in Christ in Raleigh, calls homosexuality a death style. And has long fought against those who equate the battle for gay rights with other civil rights struggles. Mr. Reverend Wooden called Tuesday, when this was decided yesterday, a great day for the citizens of this state. Death style. Hey. Sick bastards. And did I mention this hour has been sponsored by Larry Hotham? Thanks, Larry. His message is for his daughter, Michelle. He writes, happy birthday, Michelle. Love, Dad. Love, Dad. In North Carolina, people like, they quote Vicki Threlfall, who's 47, who married her partner Molly O'Neill, also 47, in Massachusetts in 2004. And Tusi was the day to sit down with their 10-year-old daughter and try to explain it all. Ms. Threlfall said, we told her that this is something about civil rights. We said, you remember a long time ago how African Americans weren't treated fairly? This is like that. There are a lot of people who are afraid and don't know gay people. You think it'll ever stop? No, I don't think it will either. Next hour, we will talk with Kevin Z. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Sponsored by Roger Asai. Thank you, Roger. He is sponsoring this hour in honor of the Palestinian children from Gaza who were part of the exhibit, the art exhibit entitled A Child's View from Gaza by the Middle East Children's Alliance, which has been canceled. Roger Asai sponsors this hour of the program in honor of those children. Thank you, Roger. Last week, we chatted for a while with Dr. Margaret Flowers, who is one of the sponsors of the event coming up October 6th, beginning October 6th, in, what is it, Kathy? Freedom Plaza. In Washington, D.C. This event, which is sponsored by as many peace groups as I guess exist in the United States, is designed to give people an opportunity to participate if they choose to, in much the same way as the Egyptians, the Egyptian people, gravitated towards Tahrir Square when the people of that country finally decided they had enough of corrupt government. Now, I'm not implying, and I don't believe that the October 2011 movement is implying, that there is a unique corruption to be found within the Obama administration. It's not that at all. The government of the United States, the governing of the United States, has been co-opted by the predatory capitalist right in this country, peppered with a bunch of Christian insanity, religious insanity. And I don't have to describe for you what has happened in this country. I don't. We have unindicted war criminals who are war criminals by our definition, as laid out by Supreme Court Justice Jackson during the Nuremberg trials. Cheney and Bush and their cohort are guilty of the crimes that Justice Jackson said contain within them all the other crimes that can be committed on the international stage. The Obama administration chose not to prosecute. The Obama administration, by that I mean Barack Obama himself, has been continuing some of the policies, some of the horrific policies of the Bush crime family that he, Obama, swore. Well, okay, he didn't swear. He promised during his campaign that he would stop. So the October 2011 movement, you can write upon that slate whatever you want to write. It is a movement, though, against war, against imperialism. It is a movement that, in my opinion anyway, and we're going to talk to Kevin Zeese in a moment and find out if he agrees, it's a movement that is designed to do what the American people just, feel they have not had the opportunity to do. And that is to let the machine understand that there comes a time when it has to stop. It has to stop. I don't have to explain to you in any more detail than I do nightly about predatory capitalism, if that's not a redundancy now, which in my opinion it is. And I've quoted for you Mario Savio's seminal statement from 1964, for Christ's sake, at the University of California, Berkeley, where he made just that declaration that the operation of the Sheen eventually becomes so odious, so criminal, not his word, mine, but that's what he meant, that you have to stop it. And if you do not make the effort to stop it, then you are participating in its continuing operation. So, the October 2011 movement is, I believe, an attempt to form a bond with people across North Africa, people within the Middle East, people around the globe who are deciding that neoliberal economic policies coupled with this move toward fascism has got to be stopped. Joining us now from New York is Kevin Zeese, who is executive director and co-founder of Voters for Peace, among other organizations, and one of the organizers, producers, I would venture, of the October 2011 event. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me on. Nice introduction.
Yeah, I'm very pleased to have you here. I guess the best place to start here is just... Why October? Why 2011?
Good questions. October 6th is the beginning of the 11th year of the Afghanistan war, and it is also the first week of the new federal fiscal year, which promises to be an austerity budget for everything except for militarism and national security. In fact, when President Obama submitted his budget for the fiscal year, he took off the table cuts to the military, intelligence and national security, homeland security, which was, that all totaled 66% of discretionary spending. That means the remaining 44% will face cuts, and that includes environmental protection, job creation, investment in new energy economy, mass transit, you know, clean water, clean air, you pick it, it's all getting hurt because we're emphasizing militarism. So what happened, we got together, really there's only a handful of us, got together and we're following what's happening in the Arab Spring as well as what's happening in Spain and Greece, and there are now movements across of Europe against neoliberalism that we don't hear about in the United States, but they are occurring. And we saw that was going on there, and we saw Madison happening here. We saw similar things going on in Michigan and Ohio. Mm-hmm. Then I did actually an interesting search of a range of issues, and we have it on the front page of October 2011.org. One of the articles I'm not sure if it's on the front page. You haven't signed up yet, but once you sign up, you'll see it. It's an article that summarizes resistance actions across the country. And I'm sure that there are no political activists, even you, Mike, who covers these issues so closely. I know I was surprised. I'm involved in a range of issues. Our economic project, IFTAREconomy.us, works on health care, wealth divide, banking, environment, you know, energy, and so I'm involved in a range of issues. And I was surprised at the number of protests happening around the country. If you were to look at the protests happening around the country, you would say America is in revolt. And that's not covering the media, because it's a revolt against corporate power, concentrated corporate power. It's a revolt against militarism. And that's what October 6th is about. October 7th is about, is ending corporatism and militarism. Those are the two twin evils that have corrupted our government, and it's corrupted both political parties. It's corrupting Barack Obama. It's making our country dysfunctional in the face of numerous crisis situations.
Mm-hmm. We have a break here in about 20 seconds, Kevin, but what I want to ask, because I know a lot of people who would identify themselves as liberals are either ignoring the Obama policies that are no more liberal than the policies of George W. Bush. But maybe you have an answer as to why, what you just brought up. Why has Barack Obama chosen to take a political line that protects militarism and corporatism? The very two things that you've identified, a lot of people have identified as those two forces that are destroying this country. So let's take a break. We'll come back. And if you can give us an answer to that, why has Obama chosen to protect these? Stay with us. We're talking with Kevin Zeese of the October 2011 movement. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Show, because each time you listen to Right Wing Radio, God kills a kitten.
21 past the hour, we're talking with Kevin Zeese, who is one of the co-founders, executive director of Voters for Peace, and also one of the organizers of the October 2011 event that'll be starting the 6th of October, a Thursday, in Freedom Plaza in Washington, D.C. Why, Kevin, in your opinion, has Barack Obama refused to deny the national security state what it insists on having, and that is just an unending flow of money for military operations and military hardware?
Well, it's not only that, it's also an unending flow of money to the health insurance industry rather than solving the health care problem. It's an unending flow to Wall Street rather than solving the financial collapse. It's an unending flow to coal and nuclear and oil rather than putting in place new energy economies. So it's a whole list of corporatist and militarist issues. I think the answer comes from your opening quote of Mario Savio. It's an odious machine that he is in charge of, he is in the middle of, and to rise in the ranks from someone who worked in the Democratic Party apparatus initially collecting signatures to get Carol Moseley Braun on the ballot in Illinois, then to a state legislator, running for Congress and losing, running for the Senate and running for president, that's a process that tames you. Mm-hmm. And it makes you part of the odious machine. And now it's gotten to the point that he is the guy who will run the first $1 billion ever campaign. He's holding fundraisers around the country where he charges $35,800 for the entry. That is $1,000 more than the median income of an individual in the United States. So an individual couldn't put all of his income on the table and be $1,000 short.
Mm-hmm.
So he's become part of the odious machine. And that's and I think anyone in that who gets to that point of the President of the United States would be part of the odious machine that needs to be stopped. And so we're not focused on President Obama solely. Of course, he deserves a lot of attention for his own actions.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at the broader picture of the machine that includes the government and the corporate powers behind it. And so when we do our October 2011.org event, we will not only be in Freedom Plaza, we will also be outside of Washington, D.C., outside of Freedom Plaza, throughout Washington, D.C., K Street, various trade associations, congressional offices, and we will be working to stop the machine as part of our process.
To what extent, Kevin, is the October 2011 organization, such as it is, and not that it's highly organized. This is a gathering, or it's fine to be a gathering of various and disparate groups. But to what extent are people who are coming ready to confront, as you have, as I have, the police power of Washington, D.C. when they come in with the usually they come with the plastic cuffs, but sometimes they come with a little bit more determination. So to what extent is that going to be a part of this?
Well, we'll see how the police react. We are making it very clear we're a nonviolent action. We are having people sign a pledge that they will come and that they will stay in the plaza. And we make it very clear that there will be an opportunity for people to engage in civil resistance that risks arrest. Not everybody who comes will have to do that. There will be other activities that will not involve risking arrest. So people can choose, but we are making it very clear that is part of the goal. That's what we call it, stop the machine, create a new world. Stop the machine is the resistance aspect. Creating a new world will happen in Freedom Plaza. We'll be having classes in the morning. We'll be having committee meetings in the afternoon on 15 crisis issues that we identified. You can see them listed on the October2011.org site. We'll be developing policy positions on those 50 issues. We're already starting that process and having discussions on the website about some of them. And that will continue on the plaza. We hope to come out of the plaza with two things. One, a foundation on which to build an independent movement, independent of both political parties, that's going to challenge corporatism and militarism. And in addition to that, with that foundation, we want to have a group that's ready to do civil resistance at home, has had nonviolent training, understands the strategy and tactics of nonviolent training, and we want them to have learned how to an alternative economy, cooperative movement, you know, employee-owned businesses,
mm-hmm.
Community banks, local food sources, community gardens, all sorts of skills, because we believe you have to do, in addition to challenging the machine, is to build a new alternative economy that lets people no longer cooperate with the existing capital.
You're breaking up severely, Kevin. I tell you what, we've got a break here, but I want to ask you. You can stick around.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
I'm on a landline.
Yeah, really. Oh my. The next question. Maybe you can address this when you come back. I'll give you a couple of minutes here. This is kind of a long break to consider this. How much time do you think we have left in this country where the window is still open a little bit for people like you, people who, topics being discussed like are discussed on this program. How much time is left, do you think, before that window shuts? We do not have yet, in the definitive sense, a dictatorship in this country, although it's certainly drifting that way. So hold on a second, Kevin, if you don't mind. We'll take a break and come back and talk about that. How much time is left that we can still organize and still offer up this resistance? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Thank you.
Medical Talk Radio, it's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, we are talking with Kevin Zeese, who's the executive director and co-founder of Voters for Peace, a nonpartisan project working to end wars, reduce the military budget, and offer resistance to the corporatism that is bleeding the country dry. Kevin is also one of the organizers of the October 2011 movement. You can find out more about this at October2011.org. It is a gathering beginning October 6th in Freedom Plaza in Washington, D.C. that a lot of folks are hoping will become the beginnings of a movement to end what is occurring. And that brings me to that question, Kevin. How much time do you think is left before the window slams shut, the door slams shut, or the military, the national security state becomes so restrictive that events like the one you are planning are just not even allowed anymore?
That's a scary question. You know, when I was thinking about the question, I first thought about from an environmental perspective. I think we probably in a generation left when you look at the resource depletion, the degradation of the environment, the strange hurricane, earthquake, tidal waves that we're facing. We may be just on a ticking clock on the issue of our climate, so that's one factor. But then you look at the national security state, and there's a couple ways to look at it. They have a lot of power, but you also recognize they're not as powerful as they look as well. I mean, we already have the largest prison population in the world. 25% of the world's prisoners reside in the land of the free, even though we're only 5% of the world's population. So our prison population is stretched pretty full. And our military is stretched extremely full around the globe. We're fighting quagmires in multiple countries, and we have over 1,100 military bases and outposts, so it's a very stretched thin. And the economy is extremely weak to support all that. So they do look very scary. They look like they could close the internet at any time. They could arrest people like me and stop, you know, movements from developing. But I just think that they're not as powerful as they look. And I think a lot of the whenever you see the verge of change, whether it's ending slavery or women voting or unions forming or farmers getting some work or some rights and, you know, foreclosure stopping in the 1880s, what you see first happening is the status quo stiffening its back.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that status quo stiffening its back is a sign that they're on the verge of collapse, that they can't take anymore. And I think that could be very true today. I think the American public is much more awake than people realize. We have on our front page an article about seven issues where the American public is right and agrees with us, and we're with the American public, and the government's going the opposite direction. And they range from, you know, getting money out of politics to health care for all through a single-payer system, to breaking up the big banks, to stopping the wars. There's a whole range of very important issues where the people have it right.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hear that in the corporate media. The corporate media only presents, you know, information that supports the corporate view. That's why the Tea Party gets so much attention. But my sense is that as powerful as the national security state looks, it's also got a lot of weaknesses in it and cracks in it, and there are people inside it who also recognize that they're part of an odious machine and are ready to break out of it. So we may be much closer to change than it looks right now, when we seem pretty damn close to a real fascist state. So, you know, I see that, but I also see the opposite, that we can actually break through.
Because of the power, though, of the national security state, and I think we can all agree that if it's anything, at least domestically, it still retains that power. It may be becoming brittle. It may be people within the apparatus, if you will. I hate to use some of these terms, but there may be people within the apparatus who are just waiting for a chance to help bring it down. But given the fact that even though resources may be stretched thin, there is still, and there always has been in this country, that attitude toward fascism that's just an inch below the surface, dig down into the soil of this country just an inch, and you're going to find that nascent fascism. Look at the agreements that tried to be struck between the Americans and the Nazis during the 30s. So this idea that There is still time. Thank God for that. But on the other hand, the thing that is scary to me is we can't, this can't be done just, as a localized movement. And by localized, I mean, I realize all power is local, but it can't be done without support of some sort around the globe. Do you agree with that?
Oh, no question. That's what's so interesting right now. So much is happening around the globe. You look at the whole Arab turnover that's occurring, and you look at what's happening in Spain with the Indignados Real Democracy Now movement. It's incredible. And, you know, we're seeing the Spanish, for example, planning a solidarity demonstration in Brussels, with us in October. We're seeing Tahrir Square also likely to have demonstrations in support of our effort, and United Kingdom in Trafalgar Square. So we're seeing support all over the world for this. People want the American empire to end. And I do think it runs deep. You know, one of our core organizers, Dennis Traynor Jr., is a filmmaker. He did a film called Manifest Destiny's Child, essentially describing American empire as the offspring of Manifest Destiny. You know, the march across the North America, taking a large chunk of Mexico, wiping out the Native Indian population. A pretty brutal history. And our current empire is also pretty brutal. Maybe one of the most brutal in world history, certainly the largest and most powerful in world history. And it's so interesting, you know, at home, the empire is never discussed. We don't discuss the
right.
empire. You don't hear it in the media.
Mm-hmm.
We're part of the largest empire in world history. It's not something you hear. So we want to bring that kind of realities out. I think the American public, when they realize the nature of empire and realize that one reason why there are no jobs at home is because you have to keep the client states happy around the globe. We have to keep the transnational corporate executives happy with large profits, with cheap labor and cheap resources around the globe. And then the militarism is going to continue to bleed our budgets dry, so there's no social safety net. You know, it's really the top half percent, the top 1% versus the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to make that clear. We need to make it clear that the 99%, at least the ones that are enlightened enough to see the truth, and obviously some are manipulated by the corporate media, are strong enough to overcome the 1%. And we are. We just have to have confidence in ourselves. We have to have self-respect for ourselves that we are smart enough to be part of this kind of a movement. We have to have collective confidence in our ability as a group to lead this country better than the economic and political elites. And they're doing such a lousy job, economic and political elites, that it's not very hard for us to see that the people could run this country a lot better than the elites are doing so.
Is there enough commonality? I realize on an essential level there certainly is, the idea of a breathable air, drinkable water, tillable soil. But is there enough commonality? I guess I'm talking ethnically, politically, racially, on religious spaces, for people to unite. The so-called Arab Spring that has occurred, and these revolutions that are continuing in various countries in the Middle East. Do have the common thread of wanting to throw off the kind of oppressive leadership that inspired these revolutions. But is there enough commonality between Americans and Tunisians, Americans and Germans, Americans and Greeks and Italians to pull this off?
Well, we put out today a letter that we signed with the Egyptian Revolutionary Movement. Numerous members of the October 2011 movement and members of the Egyptian Revolutionary Movement put together a letter where we listed four common areas of agreement that we all shared in our goals. The first was ending the abusive U.S. foreign policy, ending American empire. It's not good for us. It's not good for them. The second was real democracy, so that people actually can participate, real participatory democracy. Not just that doesn't just mean voting. That means participating in the economy, participating in the media, really participating in the management of the country on a lot of levels. And they have the same problems in Egypt. Ours are, I think, more sophisticated. You know, they have a dictatorship in Mubarak, although we called that the democracy, and Mubarak calls it democracy too. It was really a dictatorship. We have a much more complicated corporate dictatorship here that is harder for people to understand. It's more sophisticated. A third area of commonality was the wealth divide. We have actually a wider wealth divide in the United States than they have in Egypt. And we share that. We need to also move toward a economy, both environmentally and economically, so we have that in common. And finally, we have a common human rights issues that we none of us want to see our country torturing. None of us want to see abusive prisons. We don't want to see people like Bradley Manning kept in solitary confinement and nudity before he's even fully charged in any official way by the U.S. military. So we have those areas in common. And I think Americans have more in common than we realize. There's a lot of false divides in America, but one way that the 1% rules is divide and rule.
Sure.
And so they create these false divisions. But as I said, and we have on our website an article that shows supermajorities of Americans. That means 60% or more of Americans supporting seven key issues that would totally transform this country. And that's in the context of a manipulated media where they, you know, just get the corporate message all the time. Imagine if we had actually a free media.
Yeah, that's the part that is stunning. If we had a press that lived up to its First Amendment obligations. Kevin, hold on just a second if you would. I have to do another break here, right? We're talking with Kevin Zeis of the October 2011 movement. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
We shall not be moved. We'll build a mighty that stands by the water. We shall not understand in the
beyond. Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Molloy.
It is 10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Roger Asai. Thank you, Roger. His message is the sponsorship is in honor of the Palestinian Children of Gaza, whose artwork was scheduled to be shown at the Children's Museum in Oakland, California, and because of pressure from pro-Israeli groups, the exhibition was canceled. Roger, thanks for your sponsorship. I appreciate it. We're talking with Kevin Zeis, who is co-founder of Voters for Peace. How important is it, Kevin, for people to support what's going to be happening one way or the other, either locally or coming to D.C., on October 6th, how important is it? Is this something that, okay, if I can be there, I'll be there. Okay, if there's something going on in Chicago or Atlanta or, you know, Louisville, okay. How important is it?
I think it's critically important. I really think our country is in the wrong direction on many issues that are very serious crisis-level issues that, you know, literally lead to tens of thousands of deaths just from the denial of health care alone each year. I mean, it's just there's so many mistakes we're making around the world and at home that we need to get this on track because we are really at the precipice of the edge of the cliff here on so many issues. So I hope people really take it seriously and join us in Freedom Plaza. They can sign up on October2011.org. The next thing they should, if they can't join us, the next thing they should do is do two things. One, promote it to people. Let everybody know about it. Encourage others to come. And second, help support it financially. You know, we are all doing this volunteer, but just to do, you know, toilets and water and a little bit of food and stage and sound and the basics, it's a, you know, a $50,000 budget. We raised about $20,000 of it, so we could use financial support. And, you know, this is, I really hope people can make this, but we see this as the beginning. And there'll be other events. And you want to be here because you think of, you know, the I Have a Dream speech and and you think of the march in, marches in the South. You think of the so many historic events that you wish you could said you were at. Well, now you have a chance to be at a real historic event. We really see this as a moment where history is knocking and we hope people answer the call and join us on Freedom Plaza on a, you know, come to October2011.org. You can sign that Egyptian letter I mentioned earlier that with the Egyptian group. You can sign up to participate and join us. You can become a volunteer as a way to be a volunteer to do various work. You can also just join our online community and join in discussions and get start to participate if you can't make it this time. So there's lots of ways to get involved. We really urge people to go to October2011.org and get involved and take this seriously. History is not yet written. It's up to us to write it. And throughout history, we have seen pivotal moments when people came together and doing very simple things changed the course of history. Mm-hmm. Sitting on the bus, in the front of the bus, sitting in on a lunch counter where you're not allowed to sit,
right.
Sleeping in Freedom Plaza. Sleeping is a simple thing you can do anytime. You're capable of doing it. Join us there and be part of this historic moment.
Kevin, I'll be there, and I hope a lot of folks who have heard you speak, not just here, but on the various venues where you have spoken. I know your schedule as a speaker is pretty full, so I look forward to seeing you there, and I hope a lot of people show up. Thanks a lot for taking time out tonight.
Thank you very much for having me on.
All right, take care, Kevin.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. October2011.org is the website. If you haven't checked it out yet, please do so. And as Kevin said, there are a number of ways to get involved with this. It doesn't necessarily require a trip to Washington, D.C. on September 6th or you know, the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, whatever. There are other ways to get directly involved. And as Kevin pointed out, one of the things he said, you know, we make our own history. We really do. That's a fairly simple, but when you think about it, pretty profound statement. We do. We make our own history, and there are a lot of people in my generation who have watched so much go down in the past half century that we tried to warn against, that we demonstrated against. Some of it in the past 10 years. I can remember in December 2002, massive demonstrations, millions of people around the globe protesting the Bush crime family's plans to invade Iraq. And it didn't do a lot of good back then, did it? Maybe there weren't enough people in the streets here. Maybe there weren't enough people participating online here. Of course, in 2002, the online community it existed, but it wasn't very strong. It is strong now. So there's an awful lot, I think, that people can do to support this and to follow up on what Mario Savio said all those years ago. It just staggers me that famous quote was from 1964. What is that? 47 years ago? Yow. All right. We have a break coming here, and we'll come back. It is Wednesday night. It is church night, prayer meeting night on the program. So, and I say that sardonically and sarcastically and, you know, in a very Mike Malloy evil kind of way, because when we come back, we're going to try to strip the bark off the of the Catholic Church. No, not in an hour. I mean, that couldn't be done. That's a pretty powerful organization. But this inquiry that's been filed in The Hague regarding crimes against humanity perpetrated by the Catholic Church is very intriguing. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. So I was wondering what would happen, what would be the ultimate outcome of the horrific abuses, physical, psychological, emotional, mental, that have been committed by the Roman Catholic Church against the weakest of its flock, in so many instances, the children. You know, the priestly sexual abuse, the rape, the assault, the mayhem caused by these predatory bastards who disguise themselves as priests. Actually, they are priests who disguise themselves as predatory bastards, I think, sometimes. It's horrific. And you've got to remember, or you've got to question, what has happened to all those court cases? Some of them have worked their way through the judicial system and resulted in civil fines and penalties. The church has paid out tens upon millions of dollars. Some of it as hush money. Yeah, this is the Church of Christ. This is the Bride of Christ. That's what they claim. This is God on earth. That's what they claim. And they are nothing but cover-up artists for the pedophiles among them who assault and brutally rape children. Jesus, God, I don't believe I'm sitting here talking about this again. The rape of children. You know, in Darfur, when child rape occurs and the perpetrators can be found, maybe not even the ones who actually committed the rape, but the ones who ordered it, they are, if they could be found, they are brought in chains or cuffs to the International Criminal Court in The Hague and put on trial. It's about time that this Pope were put on trial. And that's exactly what is attempting to be accomplished here. Clergy sex abuse victims upset that no high-ranking Roman Catholic leaders have been prosecuted for sheltering, protecting priests guilty of child rape and child abuse, have gone to the International Criminal Court in The Hague yesterday, seeking an investigation of the Pope and top Vatican cardinals for possible crimes against humanity. Well, it's about time. Crimes against humanity. Now, of course, the Vatican called this a ludicrous publicity stunt. According to the article put out by the Center for Constitutional Rights, and you can find this at CCR Justice, ccrjustice.org, ccrjustice.org. That's a New York-based nonprofit legal group. The Center for Constitutional Rights has requested this inquiry on behalf of the organization called the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, arguing, the CCR is arguing that the global church has maintained a, quote, long-standing and pervasive system of sexual violence, end quote, despite their promises to the contrary. Oh, yeah, we're gonna go, oh, just one or two. Yeah, we'll take care of this. The complaint names Pope Benedict, Mr. Ratzinger, partly for his former role as leader of the Vatican's Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. Now, remember, just for historical reference, it was the Vatican's Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith that led and perpetrated the Inquisition several hundred years ago, and burned women at the stake, and burned Jews at the stake, and burned Muslims at the stake, decapitated people, eviscerated people, drew and quartered people. Yeah, that group. Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. Hallelujah. So Pope Benedict, Cardinal Ratzinger, as he was known in his pre-Pope days, Cardinal William Leveda, who now leads that office, the Inquisition office, Cardinal Angelo Sodano, the Vatican Secretary of State under Pope John Paul II, and Cardinal Tarcisio Bertone, who now holds that post, Vatican Secretary of State. All of these people have been named in this investigation that has been requested through the International Criminal Court. Now, attorneys for the victims who have filed the suit say that rape, sexual violence, and torture, this is the bride of Christ we're talking about here. Rape, sexual violence, and torture are considered a crime against humanity as described in the international treaty that spells out the court's mandate. The complaint also accuses Vatican officials of creating policies that perpetuated the damage, constituting an attack against a civilian population. Are you listening to this? This is like George Bush and Dick Cheney. Constituting an attack against a civilian population, an attack, an unprovoked, illegal, immoral attack against a civilian population. Oh, George Bush and Dick Cheney. No. Well, them too. But the Catholic hierarchy, the Catholic Church, the bride of Christ. Oh, my goodness. Barbara Blaine, who's president of that U.S.-based Survivors Network of those abused by priests, said going to the court was a last resort. She said, quote, "We have tried everything we could think of to get them to stop, and they won't." Well, no, the organizing principle of the Catholic Church is now, if it hasn't been for a long time, child sexual abuse. It has nothing to do with the saving of your soul. It is child sexual abuse. So Ms. Blaine says we've tried everything to get them to stop, and they won't. They won't. She said if the Pope wanted to, he could take dramatic action at any time that would help protect children today and in the future. And he refuses to take the action. End quote. This entity to which she's referring is the Bride of Christ. Really? Is the Pope not aware? Are these rapacious priests, these destroyers of children's innocence, are they not aware of what Jesus himself said? That it's the children, the attitudes, the innocence of children that constitutes his heavenly kingdom? If that's the case, then I'm assuming that people who become priests and cardinals and the Pope go through an education process where they learn what their religion talks about, what their Messiah talks about. So, in effect, then, what they are saying is, F you, God, and you too, Jesus. Isn't that what they're saying? Wow. That's pretty heavy. That's pretty dangerous. Not because of their immortal soul. Their immortal soul doesn't exist. What does exist is the fact that they are perpetrating crimes of sexual violence against children for decades, for centuries, for millennia. But this is the Bride of Christ. More on this when we come back, because this is really stomach churning.
I'm a Roman Catholic and have been since before I was born. And the one thing they say about Catholics is they'll take you as soon as you're warm. You don't have to be a 6-footer. You don't have to have a great brain. You don't have to have any clothes on. You're a Catholic the moment that came. Because every sperm is sacred. Every sperm is great. If a sperm is...
Philosophers and phenomenon.
Zone. It's Mike Malone.
21 past the hour. So the Center for Constitutional Rights, based in New York, a nonprofit legal group, at the request of the organization called Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, has gone to the International Criminal Court in The Hague and filed a request for an investigation of top Vatican officials, cardinals, for possible crimes against humanity. And, of course, the Vatican responds by calling it a ludicrous publicity stunt. Meanwhile, they continue to anally rape children. A ludicrous publicity stunt, but they continue to sexually violate children. Now, according to the Center for Constitutional Rights release about this, the odds against the court opening an investigation are enormous. The prosecutor at that court has received nearly 9,000 independent proposals for inquiries since 2002. That's when the court was created as the world's only permanent war crimes tribunal. And it has never opened a formal investigation based solely on a request like this one. But the point is here, the church, the Catholic Church, according to the complaint filed, has maintained a longstanding, quote, a longstanding and pervasive system of sexual violence, end quote. And this sexual violence has had the net effect of perpetuating damage, constituting an attack against a civilian population. But like the center realizes, the chances of this going forward, because of the power, probably the only organization in America that has more power than AIPAC, the American Israel Political Action Committee, is the Roman Catholic Church. The prosecutor at the court in The Hague, Luis Moreno Ocampo, has investigated crimes such as genocide, murder, rape, conscripting child soldiers in conflicts from Darfur to this year's violence in Libya. And as the center points out, these cases have been referred to the court by the countries where the atrocities were perpetrated or by the UN Security Council. This inquiry, this request for an inquiry, is coming from survivors. People who have survived sexual violence, anal rape, vaginal rape, as children, by priests. And then the crimes covered up, hidden, by the entire Roman Catholic hierarchy. There is not a not guilty member in the College of Cardinals, up to and including their last elected Pope, Ratzinger, because every single one of them knew, knows about, or perpetrated this crime. Every one of them. How can you be a cardinal in the church that claims to be the bride of Christ and not know of the sexual violence perpetrated against children globally? Ireland has almost imploded because of this. And cases in South America and Africa, or the investigations into violent sexual rape, if that's not redundant, a triple redundancy, a redundancy against children. The investigations in those countries haven't even begun. Another reason it'll be difficult for this investigation to move forward is because the Holy See, the Vatican, those who are the brides of Christ, is not a member state of the court, meaning prosecutors have no automatic jurisdiction there. Although the complaint covers alleged abuse in countries around the world, many of which do recognize the court's jurisdiction. So it's going to be interesting, is it not, to see how this plays out. An attorney for the Center for Constitutional Rights, Pam Spees, says, politically, people do not want to look at this. She conceded that she was not hopeful that the court would launch an investigation. But the argument from the Survivors Network is that there is no other national entity in existence that will prosecute high-level Vatican officials who not only failed to protect children, but violently, consciously, deliberately raped and destroyed their innocence. More when we come back.
Your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Okay, just a bit more of this because it's starting to turn my stomach. Every time I even hear references to the Roman Catholic enterprise in this country or globally, I get visions of priests raping children, boys and girls. And I mean, if ever there was a more evil organization on earth than organized religion generally and the Catholic Church specifically, I can't imagine what it would be. I simply can't imagine. To hold people hostage using this ridiculous claim of immortality as the stick to just beat the living hell out of people. You don't believe this way and your immortal soul will burn forever. And if I rape you and you say anything about it, you will burn, as will your mommy and daddy forever. I mean, well, if that's not evil, will somebody please define it for me? I don't necessarily believe in intrinsic evil, but if it did exist, there it is. There it is. The Center for Constitutional Rights has asked the International Criminal Court in The Hague to open an investigation into crimes against humanity perpetrated by the ruling members of the Catholic Church, up to and especially including Karl Ratzinger, the current Pope. The lawsuit, or the inquiry, filed by the Center for Constitutional Rights, has been filed on behalf of a group, I believe, based in the United States. It may all be United States victims, but it is the Survivors Network of those abused by priests. Nice title, huh? Survivors Network of those abused by priests. So, to bring this to conclusion, in this country, no Roman Catholic bishop has been criminally charged for keeping accused clergy members in parish jobs without warning parents or police. This would be concealing a crime. This would be accessory after the fact. It just goes on and on. The list of possible criminal violations here is endless. But because the church declares itself outside the law, outside all law, except God's law, and apparently God has no problem with his or its spokesmembers down here raping children. At least that's what these sick bastards would have the world believe. Within the church, you see, only the Pope can discipline bishops. Only the Pope. Not the police, not anybody. And as I went over this story, I kept thinking about, you can find them online, the picture, just do a Google search on Nazis and priests. And you will see photos from the bad old 30s in Germany and around Central Europe of priests and Nazis, both in full regalia. The Nazis dressed by Hugo Boss, the priests and bishops and cardinals dressed by, I don't know, somebody weird, that's for sure. But there they all are, as they perpetrate one of the most horrendous crimes against humanity ever. But only the Pope can discipline bishops. Bishops are immune, not just from police, but even from Nazis. The few who have been publicly punished by the Vatican have been sanctioned for molesting children, not for negligence in supervising priests. Molesting children. Bishops. Attorney Pam Spies, who's with the Center for Constitutional Rights, said when a church has been left to its own devices, it does nothing. It wouldn't even have the reforms it has now if these cases hadn't begun to bubble up and erupt in the public outside the confines of what the church can control, end quote. It's astonishing. And it's never ending. As this inquiry, this request for an inquiry, specifically states, nothing has changed. The abuse, the rape, the violence continues. The church will do nothing. The church will do nothing. Absolutely nothing. And as Barbara Blaine, who's the president of the Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, says, quote, these priests and church officials live by some other law. Somehow they're not held accountable like every other citizen of a nation. That would be horrific in and of itself, but what must end is shattering the innocence of even one more child, end quote. Well, your old cynic Mike Malloy says here that in order for that to happen, of course, there has to be a complete reformation of the church, if not its utter destruction. It serves no function whatsoever except to poison discourse among human beings. But let's assume that people have to have their opiate. They have to have it. Okay, then for those people who just insist on having this drug called religion, is there any way that you people can get together and decide that the greatest perpetrator of violence against children in the history of the human race, that would be the Roman Catholic Church, that somehow it should be restricted from doing any more damage, in other words, reformed, maybe allowing married priests on the assumption that married priests who have a different outlet for their sexuality would not rape children? And by married priests, I mean hetero and homo. It doesn't make any difference. Just marriage. So these people have an outlet for their sexual aggression. Would it also not make sense to open up the church's priesthood to women? But none of this will happen, and you know as well as I will, as I do, that it will not happen. The church is a calcified, horrendous institution that is about power, violence, abuse, mayhem, murder, lies, deceit, poison, destruction, madness, insanity. Ooh, have I left anything out? Those are the organizing principles of the Roman Catholic Church. And if you disagree with that, send me an email and show me how that's not the case. Oh, don't write to me and tell me about the good works done by certain priests and nuns. I don't deny that. Of course. Just like the people who want to scream at me that I'm being anti-Semitic because I talk about the State of Israel's policies against the Palestinians. Has nothing to do with Jewishness or being Jewish. In fact, some of the most ardent pro-Palestinian peace activists are in fact Jewish. But what I'm talking about here, not the individual acts of charity or good works committed by people who happen to be priests, who happen to be nuns, but about the organizational structure of the Roman Catholic Church that not only permits violence against children, but one has to start believing that it encourages it. Maybe passively, but still encourages it, because it does nothing to stop it. Nothing. It goes on as we sit here right now talking. There is a priest someplace buggering a little child. Times 1,000. 10,000? Of course, to a hardcore atheist like me, the answer is the absolute elimination. And of course, this won't happen. But the elimination of all organized religions. They're madness. They're insane. Total insanity. When we come back from this next break, here's another one from Virginia that doesn't involve the Catholic Church necessarily. It involves the Protestants, the people who are, in their own way, more insane than the Catholics. At least the Catholics have more or less a global structure within which they can commit their violence. Whereas the Protestants, they have all sorts of offshoots, everything from people who love to grab up fistfuls of snakes until they get bit on the throat and die, to people who want to stand around and start gibbering like a three-year-old and tell you they're speaking in tongues to very sedate Methodists, of which I used to be part of that congregation. Flaming, fiery, you're going to rot in hell, Baptist. The Protestants are all over the map. At least the Catholics in their violence have it pretty much codified in a way that if you meet a Catholic in the southernmost part of Chile and a Catholic in Norway, they're going to be about the same in the way they conduct themselves, right? But Protestants, we'll be right back. The lengths that I will go to, the distance in your eyes. Oh no, I've said too much. I set it up. That's me in the corner. That's me in the spotlight. Losing my religion. Wednesday night religion prayer meeting. It's always rough. It's just like I guess there is some kind of an echo in my head about when I really did go to Wednesday night prayer meeting, and it was pretty scary. You know, it really was to watch the old people gather in an upper room of the church, and I would usually be the only kid there, and then they would start that praying. Ooh. But I don't think that's the reason that religion turns my stomach. I think part of it is because of the fact that it's a hostage-taking organization. And it's an organization that, throughout its existence, has created more chaos, murder, and mayhem on this planet than any political insanity could even imagine. So moving on to the Protestants now in Virginia. Yep. civil liberties groups are suing a Southwest Virginia school board. Southwest Virginia, of course, is fertile ground for Protestant crazy people. And that's where Jerry Falwell and his Liberty University and all these other sampholes of intelligence exist. But a Southwest Virginia school board has decided to post the Ten Commandments, contending the civil liberties groups say that that display, you know the riff, it violates the Constitution's guarantee of separation of church and state. But you see, to Protestant crazy people, that doesn't mean anything. That doesn't mean anything. You know, take your civil law and jam it where the sun don't shine. They don't care. They don't care about that. ACLU of Virginia filed a lawsuit yesterday against the Giles County School Board in a district court in Roanoke on behalf of a Narrows High School student and the student's parents. The lawsuit says the display unconstitutionally promotes a specific religious faith and serves no secular purpose. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And the lawsuit seeks to have the Ten Commandments removed from school walls and a ban on further display of the biblical documents. Da, 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 da. Well, after removing these, and the Ten Commandments, isn't seven of them, are just exercises in egomaniacal activity by this crazed God that the Jews came up with. I mean, that has nothing, you know, has nothing to do with civil law, has nothing to do with the establishment of states, and has everything to do with, you mess with me and I'll break your damn head! That's what the Ten Commandments are about. There's seven of them anyway. So anyway, the school board took them down during the last school year. But when school got when school was over this past year, the school board members voted in June to rehang them and say that it was part of displays that include other U.S. historical documents, as if the Ten Commandments are part of U.S. historical documents. As near as I can remember from my biblical brainwashing, didn't that occur in Sinai? I mean, wasn't that up in the mountains of someplace over there, right? But, you know, to Protestant crazy people, especially in the U.S. Bible Belt, none of that stuff means anything. You know, science, geography, history, rational thought means nothing. It's garbage. All of that's garbage. So what they try to do, what they always try to do, they try to here in Georgia, too. They say, okay, we're not going to put up the Ten Commandments as a religious document, but as an historical document. So then the Protestant crazy people try it again. Now, you've got to acknowledge this, that old historical document BS that these religious freaks come up with. Well, these are historical documents. If it were suggested by other than those trying to circumvent the First Amendment, like, for example, if I were to suggest that the Bible is merely an historical document, well, not me. Nobody pays any attention to me. But let's supposing that some political candidate, some religious political candidate, came up with an argument, well, these are only historical, not religious, but a secular, an atheist. Say, am I confusing you? An atheist political candidate said, look, the Ten Commandments are only an historical document. The screaming that would erupt from, like, Focus on the Family and Pat Robertson, the rest of these snakes, the screaming, they're denigrating our religion. These are not historical documents. This is the word of God. You see? So on the one hand, they sweat and scream and yell and froth and threaten your very goddamn life if you don't acknowledge that these are words writ with the finger of God up in the mountains to Moses, right? Zzz. But on the other hand, they can prostitute their own religion by saying, oh, no, these are just historical documents. You notice how this works, right? Right, of course. These are just historical documents. Oh, they're historical documents. Don't you say they're historical documents! But you just said, no, I don't care what I just said. Oh, and North Carolina, coming up during their primary season, their political primary season in May, coming up this coming May, they will have on the ballot a constitutional amendment that says people who happen to be gay shall be denied equal protection under the law. Oh, it won't be worded that way. What it'll say is, we amend the Constitution of the state of North Carolina, the Commonwealth, whatever the hell it is, to prohibit two people of the same sex from getting married. That's what it'll say. But what it really means is, we, the state that produced Thomas Jefferson, that led the revolution against tyranny, we have decided that our Constitution really doesn't apply to people of the same sex. So we want to deny them equal protection. So we're going to put it on the ballot. That's in North Carolina. Well, wait a minute. Thomas Jefferson. I know. I got all confused about Virginia and the previous Christian crazy story. North Carolina did not produce Jefferson. I understand. I'm getting very, very confused. I'm glad church is over. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.